And this is Honky Tonk Man, the greatest intercontinental champion of all time. And of course, you're listening to another wrestling podcast. Unbelievable.
It's time for another wrestling podcast.
The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at
the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
They think they got the answers. I change the question.
The cream of the crop.
Nobody does it better.
These are the best in the world, brother. These are the best at what they do.
When we talk about the legends of the sport, there's only two in my book.
Another wrestling podcast.
Another wrestling podcast. Now can you dig that, sucker?
All right. Welcome to another wrestling podcast. This is episode 120. I'm Steve Credo.
And I'm Jonathan Benjamin.
And yet another week for another wrestling podcast. We keep stacking them up, Jonathan, and we keep getting the guests. Who's going to be joining us today?
Well, you may know her as Lady Blossom, but we know her as Jeannie Clark. She is coming on the show today to talk to us about her new book, Through the Shattered Glass. This is a can't-miss interview, and we're so excited that you joined us today. So thanks for stopping by, and let's get right into it today, Steve.
Definitely. Another big week. There's always a big week in wrestling. So it's the week that was. Let's try to get to some of the main talking points, if you will, of what's happening out there, especially in the land of WWE. You know, the cream of the crop always rises to the top, so we'll stick with that, if we will. Jonathan, the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast had Dean Ambrose, the WWE heavyweight champion of the world, on after Raw this week. Did you see it?
I did. Yeah.
I have a lot of hate to spew, Jonathan. I have a lot of hate. Hear me out. I'm not a fan of Dean Ambrose. I met him once during WrestleMania weekend. He was a jerk. I could care less about the guy. But I think he deserves to be the WWE champion for everything that he's been through. I think he has a good character. But I don't think he's ever going to have the WWE Championship again for a very long time after this interview. Jonathan, to be the WWE Champion comes with a lot of bells and whistles. You're technically the face of the company. They're putting you on TV. They're sending you all around. Everywhere you go, people know that you are the head, of the WWE, if you will. You know, you're the champion. Steve Austin interviewed him. And it has to have been the worst interview I've ever seen, whether it be a podcast, an interview on TV, anything. Jonathan, in wrestling, 50% of what you do is talking. Even Dean Ambrose said he could talk all day, but what happened? It was like a train wreck. Like, I don't know. He just stumbled. He couldn't, like, just spit it out. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if there's pressure. It's okay. To me, it feels like the whole classic Money in the Bank situation. The very first Money in the Bank is like what everybody holds everything else against. So, you know, of course, everybody's going to try to outdo each other. You had Vince McMahon. You've had Triple H on there. You've had some amazing talents. And obviously, podcasting isn't as easy as it looks. And I don't know how much they prep people before they go in. So maybe Dean's just one of those people that isn't great on the fly. I mean, he seems like a pretty good talker, judging by just, you know, past promos and stuff when he was Jon Moxley. But I don't know. I did expect a little bit more, but as I said, I understand that sometimes, it's just the way the podcasts go. I would like to see it a little more loose. Maybe if both of them had a few brewskis before the podcast, maybe that would have brought some more talking out. But yeah, it was surprising to me. I thought that Dean would have been a little more open about what's going on.
And I remember I listened to him. I believe it was on Colt Cabana's podcast, and he had no problem. It was fine. Like, I have no idea, man. I really tried my best to get to the very end of it, and it's just like, it's like the little engine that could. I think I can. And I was like, man, wow. It was just, I don't know. Like, Steve Austin kept throwing him softballs, and he just kept not wanting to hit them. You know, like, I don't know. Maybe he just wasn't feeling it that night. I have no idea. To where, you know, he tried talking about his past, his dad, and all this other stuff, and he was just trying to skirt around a lot of stuff. And man, I don't know. For somebody who cuts promos for a living and somebody who's the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, you think he would have this down, you know, down pat, talking. I don't know. It was, I don't think I'll ever watch that again. I don't even want to watch that again. And I'll tell you what, just in my point of view, after seeing that, if Vince was watching that, I'm sorry, how do you not say, like, okay, he's done this champion. I cannot have him as champion anymore. Like, I'm not going to strip him the next night, but, you know, come SummerSlam, I'm giving it to Dolph Ziggler or something like that. I mean, I don't know. To be the face of the company, I feel like you have to just be at a, I don't know, more camera friendly, more interview friendly, just something to where you don't, I don't know. I don't even know how to classify him. And that's the thing to where I don't like Dean Ambrose, but even if I loved him, I would still probably say the same amount of stuff that I am right now to where, it was just the worst. It was probably the worst thing of the week I saw in the land of wrestling.
So, yeah, I think that Dean may, I don't know, maybe he had a bad day. That it always happens. Even like on the Ride Along, it seemed like him and Reigns had more like chemistry than this. So I wouldn't be surprised if something was going on or whatever. But when you're on the Stone Cold show, the Stone Cold podcast, I feel like you really got to be on because Stone Cold's such a, you know, commanding presence. So I'm a little bit surprised by this, but, you know, I watched it. I thought it was okay, but that's pretty much as far as it went.
Definitely. But it was interesting just to see. I figured we were going to get a lot more out of him, but we didn't. But that's what happens. Jonathan, another surprise ending to a career. Ryback is officially gone from WWE, and they'd even wish him his best in his future endeavors. It was just that he's gone. What do you think about this? I even hear he might even be showing up to some local shows coming up. Are you excited to see The Ryback on the indies? Or actually, I'm sorry, his name on the indies is going to be The Big Guy. Are you excited to see The Big Guy?
You know what? Ryan Reeves, a.k.a. Skip Sheffield, a.k.a. Ryback, has always been just kind of Ryback to me, you know what I mean? Like, I think that he's good. I think that he is what he is. I don't necessarily think that in the landscape of the WWE, it's going to be that big of a loss for either party. I think that obviously he spoke his mind about what he thought, and the WWE top talent didn't really think that that was appropriate. And so now, you know, he's kind of on his own. But, you know, it ends up working out for a lot of these guys. You know, they leave the WWE, they leave TNA, they leave Ring of Honor, whatever. They head out on the indies, and they make quite a career out of that. So, you know, like Adam Rose recently was, you know, left the WWE, and it seems like he's doing great. So I wish Ryback nothing but the best of luck. I think that it'll be great. But, yeah, I think it'll be cool to see him around here locally, at least, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, what he did when he left, I think he was looking for more money. I think he's also said that, you know, considering that it's a predetermined show, like, you know, it's not an actual match to where, you know, he's not really winning. These guys aren't really winning. He was saying that they should be paid equal. And how if you're the champion, you get paid a lot more money than if you're not the champion. And so on. So I think he was really mad about that, where there wasn't really equal pay in the for the performers. So I understand where he's coming from. But at the same time, I mean, Ryback, you've only really been in here for a few years. I don't think you really had that credibility to be saying, you know, equal pay for everybody. It's not like The Undertaker should be saying that, or I don't know. But I understand where he was coming from. He was kind of mad at that. He left. He took his ball, and he left. And now, you know, we're going to see him wherever on the indies, and it should be interesting for the big guy. Do you think we'll ever see him return to the WWE? Do you think this is a type of wrestler that they're going to want back in a hurry?
I think this is one of those people that time away from everything will be good for him. You know, he's going to go out on the indies. Everything's going to be fine for him. But then I think he's probably going to end up, I would assume, getting into some sort of nutrition type of situation. I've seen some teasers and stuff about that already. And then, you know, maybe 5 years down the road, if everything works out for him, then we may see him back. But I would not be surprised if Ryback never came back to the WWE, just because, you know, I just don't think that – I think it left a sour taste in his mouth. I think that the whole thing with CM Punk also kind of hurt him. I think that bothered him and hurt him a little bit. But ultimately, I think that he is good for what he is, and that he's going to do fine on his own. But I just don't see him coming back to WWE anytime soon.
Definitely. And you know what always bothered me about him, to where if they did this one change, I thought – it would have totally, you know, made him a big superstar. He was kind of slow motion to me, where he'd come out, he'd lift up his arms, throw them down, lift them up, throw them down. And that was it. And then he'd stomp to the ring. I'm telling you, if he put face paint on, if he ran to the ring, did some Ultimate Warrior type shaking the ropes, and, you know, came in, squashed the guy, and then ran back out. If he was that full of energy, boom, I would totally be a fan of Ryback. I think he was like, he had the Ultimate Warrior appeal, but he didn't have the makeup. He didn't have the little tassels around the legs or arms. And, you know, he didn't have that energy. I think he was just too slow motion for him. And I would have loved to seen him just run to the ring with that Ultimate Warrior energy, do some squash matches, and that's it. And I think there you go. There's Ryback reincarnated, Ryback 2.0. The Ryback Warrior, I think that's what really would have put him over the top for me. But we'll see what happens with Ryback on the road and on the indie scene in a town near you. Speaking of some little breaking news we have, Damian Sandow has signed with TNA. He's going to be on TNA. Jonathan, what do you expect from this, especially with all the talk that people are just waiting for this ship to sink? They're still signing talents and names, and now we have Damian Sandow joining the ship.
Well, once again, whenever somebody leaves the WWE, they have what seems like a lot of options, but really it's not a lot. So Sandow now out of the WWE looking for full-time work, I'm sure. I know that he said the acting bug kind of bit him. He'd like to try to, you know, start acting or whatever. But keeping your name out there in the wrestling world, I don't think that Sandow has given all that he can to professional wrestling. I think that people are going to be surprised whenever they see him. He had a huge following in the WWE. I just don't understand why it never worked with him, whether it be the writers, whether it would be the timing with the fans. You know, they put him with The Miz. I just don't know exactly what happened. It seemed like it was a couple steps forward with him and then six steps back. I think he's a great talent. I think that he's just amazing. I saw him a few times wrestle in OVW. And, you know, he's actually been in WWE or with WWE for quite a while. I think people forget that he was with Michelle McCool. They had a tag team. It was, it was Idol and Stevens, I think it was. But he was there, and absolutely, great person. So I was sad to see him leave, but I knew it wouldn't keep him down. He's going to be appearing in a lot of independent promotions around as well. So I'm looking forward to see what they actually do with him in TNA, because, you know, TNA, for whatever reason, I see a lot of these guys in TNA, very few of them have, like, gimmicks, I guess. So it'll be cool to see what they do with him.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we'll see what happens with the TNA situation. But I don't know. I wouldn't have hopped on the sinking ship just yet. But it's interesting. We'll see what happens with him. And I didn't think he'd even want to do that much wrestling after this. I thought he would want to do something else. But I guess, like you said, you know, keep that name out there. And they definitely don't have as many dates like the WWE. So TNA is definitely a lot less strenuous on their career. But another person has left, Jonathan. Joey Styles, officially gone from the WWE. A lot of people are linking it back to this little shoot he did on Facebook Live. Have you had a chance to watch this? I watched it, and I didn't think it was as bad, but looking at it from a company perspective, he must have said, I think they're going to fire me for this, like 10 times during the interview. And he didn't really say anything that crazy or that drastically, like, oh my gosh, we can't have this said on the air or anything like that. But he just spoke his mind, and there wasn't anything that crazy about it, and officially, he's gone, Jonathan. What did you think about that?
Well, I almost did a oh my god, but I can never do a Joey Styles oh my god. But listen, I thought that he's doing some amazing things. He's done a lot with the social media. You know, he's been a mainstay. And I'm sure if you ask him too, like, he probably feels that he, you know, like the fairy tale probably ended a long time ago. Like, he never knew that he was going to be involved after ECW, you know, like WWE kind of swallowed everything up. So he could have just as easily not been a part of that. But he's been with WWE for a long time. I think he's made some great accomplishments. He's probably done more than he ever dreamed he could. It will be a little sad that he's not there. But once again, you know, with somebody like Joey Styles, I think that he's given a lot to the companies that he's worked for, so people always want him back. I would assume that we're going to get him around at some, you know, some Northeast Indies, if you will. But yeah, it's good that he's going to be fine. I mean, obviously, that's the important thing, is you never want to see any of these people, you know, not land on their feet. But I think he's got a unique skill set. He's probably could do voiceover work. He could do announcing for probably just about anything.
We'll see you soon, Joey Styles.
Hey, this is Ryan C. Stewart from Poughkeepsie, New York. But I wanted to call and say I'm very psyched for the Lady Blossom interview, and I'll call back again after I listen to it. World Class was one of the very last territories still operating, so that makes Lady Blossom one of the last beauties, divas, if you want to call them that, but one of the last bombshells of the territory era. So I really look forward to hearing what she has to say, and I'm glad that women are being showcased on this show, and keep doing what you're doing. You guys are doing a great job. Peace.
Joining us right now is an author and I would say a very historic figure in the world of professional wrestling. You can check out her new book, Through the Shattered Glass. It is on Amazon right now. And ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please welcome Jeannie Clark. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good, and I just want to say thank you for having me.
Of course.
And just getting back to England from Charlotte, where I had a great 4 days with the NWA Fan Fest, which awesome. Was my first time back to the States in 15 years.
Oh, wow.
So it was just awesome.
Great. You have a brand new book out entitled Through the Shattered Glass. What can you tell us about this project and why you decided to write it now?
Well, the reason I wrote it in the last year or so was because I was very ill for 17 years as an addict. And it was a therapeutic process for me, which I learned to write things down when I was in rehab and carried on writing after I came out of rehab. And I got so much notes on things that have happened in my life that I thought it would make a great book. And I didn't actually expect anybody to read it. I think I wrote it for myself and my children. And then I just thought, you know, if anybody was interested what happened to me, because I was just gone off the scene, that it could be an inspirational book in a way, because I'm one of the few people that actually have gone through so much with addiction, and I'm here to tell the story. So, yeah, I just thought it was a really cool project to let people know where I'm at, what I'm doing, and make amends with my daughters as well for, you know, been through so much, and I wanted them to know how I came out of the addiction. So that book will sort of be there for years and years, and it was a really true and accurate account of everything that happened in my life, and I'm just really proud of it.
We mentioned Amazon, but for people that are listening right now, is that the best place for them to go to find your book?
Yeah, Amazon.com or Amazon.co.uk. Although, if they would like a signed copy directly from me, they can contact me via Facebook, and I'd be happy to mail one out to them as well.
Awesome. Now, you mentioned that, you know, you wrote a lot about addiction and some of your struggles in this book. As you were starting to go through this writing process, did you kind of find it difficult to go back and revisit the past, or was it therapeutic for you to be able to kind of get all this out in the open?
I think both, because my original draft of the book, I didn't go into some of the struggles that I had that were things that I'd actually never told anybody, not a soul, for all that time. And one of my co-writers was sort of pushing me to be brave. His name is Bradley Craig. He was pushing me to be brave. And my other writer, Neil Cameron, was also very much supportive. And so the original draft didn't include some of the horror of the addiction, but I found it somewhat difficult to open up. But after I actually did open up, I felt like I had some kind of closure. So I definitely think the book has given me closure. So it's something that I'm really grateful to my writers for pushing me to open up.
Definitely. You're very candid about your struggles with drug abuse in this book. Why do you think drugs have played such a major part in professional wrestling and, you know, maybe just entertainment in general, that whole culture?
I think with me, it started a little bit just being around the industry, because there were, I don't think there are so much nowadays, but at the time of the Portland territory in the World Class, it was very easily available. And then WCW, with the schedule, you tend to think, I need a little bit of sleep here, and you just take the odd pill. But then it just kind of snowballed into a dependency. But maybe the pets, and not for me, but for the guys, you know, pain pills, because they're taking bumps every night, and also the traveling makes you really tired. And then when you go to the gym, you need to wake up a bit. So I think they're very easily to get, because there would be a lot of what we call mark doctors that were willing to give out a lot of prescriptions. My major addiction actually started when I had my children. And I think, as I put in the book, you know, a lot of mine was sort of the way I felt. I was quite lonely, and just certain things that were going on around the time Steve made it really big. And I just became to where I was taking more and more, and my tolerance was growing, and the addiction was now out of control, unmanageable. But I think that the entertainment industry does, you know, that there's a lot of drugs in it because of certain pressures on you. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you still currently keep up with professional wrestling, if you watch it or not. But as you said, I think that they are taking certain steps in the right direction to kind of help get people out of there. You know, we just saw, unfortunately, Joni Laura China passed away due to you know, what they're saying is a you know, issue with drugs. Do you think that it's heading in the right way in the professional wrestling and entertainment industry, that there people are out there doing less of these prescription drugs?
I haven't actually kept up with all the show recently, but I do understand the WWE wellness policy is obviously working, because I think if you go back to the 80s, and I'm not sure of this, 80s, 90s, there were a lot more wrestlers that died to drugs than nowadays. I don't think you really hit up, I mean, Joni, yeah, but I don't think it's as bad. I think there's the wellness policy is working really well.
Now, at what point did you decide that you wanted to get clean, Jeannie? How did you go about doing that?
Well, I was actually becoming onto harder and harder drugs, which is progressive addiction. I mean, the more you take, the more you want, the more you need. You double the doses. And what happened with me is it was Christmas time, which is a time, obviously, I really enjoyed with my daughters, and I was extremely unwell. And I think the day that I hit what they call rock bottom, where you just think, so, you know, I'm dying, I can't go on, was the Christmas Day 3 years ago. And I'd lost a lot of weight that year, and I kept getting a reflection of myself in the mirror, and I just looked awful. And I became to where I couldn't do my housework, I couldn't do simple things like shopping, and everything was becoming a struggle. Just living was becoming, my bills wasn't getting paid, and I was isolating, you know. So I knew that Christmas I was ruining almost for my kids, because I couldn't join in and I couldn't have fun because I was so ill. And I actually went in to my daughter's bedroom and I told them, you know, I need help. And they called a rehab. But I think every addict has to hit that point where they know that they can't go on anymore with life. I mean, it's just too difficult. Even taking a shower was difficult. Just walking to the bathroom to take a shower, I got that bad. And I knew that I would end up either in jail, I would end up in a hospital of some kind, or I would die. So I just hit that point where I would do anything to get help. And my daughters, as much as I feel really ashamed what I put them through, I think that was the beginning of the end. And they called the rehab, and I've actually never taken anything since. So for 3 years, I've been clean now.
Well, that is, first of all, congratulations on that. That is, that's an amazing feat. Now that you've kind of gotten one book done, have you given any thought to maybe writing any more?
I possibly would maybe write another book, but it's a completely different subject, and I'll talk about that another time. But yes, I find writing is something I really enjoy, and you know, it's certain issues that I feel passionate about. That drug addiction, I feel a lot of passion for to talk about. And And I think that writing is so therapeutic. It's a way of releasing all the feelings and putting them on paper. It's sometimes when you write things down, things don't twirl around your head so much, and you get it down and you can shut the book and say, you know, it's you've moved on from it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, if we could take a step back a little bit too, you know, and how you eventually ended up becoming Lady Blossom. Where did you grow up? And do you remember maybe the first time you actually saw professional wrestling or got just from watching it?
Yeah, I used to have a friend when I was a teenager who, her and I would go to a lot of rock concerts together during the 70s with people like Queen and David Bowie and in the punk rock era in the UK. But we would always get together and go to these concerts, and I would go to her house, and I would see wrestling or hear wrestling on the TV in the UK, where it was extremely popular on a Saturday afternoon. And my friend's dad used to be watching it, and he actually got sick and gave my friend and I tickets. I'd never really been a fan of wrestling prior to that. I was only like 19. And the very first show that I went to, I met Chris Adams. So we started dating and basically came into the business by sort of a fluke, just that my friend's dad gave us tickets because he was ill and he couldn't go. And after I met Chris is when I started to travel around the UK. And I remember a lot of the legends of starting out, that Dynamite Kid, Tom Billington and David Boy Smith were all sort of young and about 19, 20, just starting out. So I got to work with them before they ever became really, well, ever came to the States. Adrian Street and Mark Rocco and all the Marty Jones and all the people. I actually was in awe of these guys at 19 years old, and I was just happy to be accepted because there weren't a lot of women about then, and I was the only girl on the road, and that's when I started to really enjoy the pro wrestling industry.
Well, you've spent a lot of time in the wrestling industry, not only in the UK, but also as well in the United States. So just from spending time in both of them, what are there any, like, for fans that may be only accustomed to one of these types of wrestling, are there big differences between wrestling in the United Kingdom versus the United States?
I think it's actually more of a sport, or was more of a sport in the UK. And they would have rounds like boxing. And in a way, you have to really think about it, how difficult that must have been, because it's like they had three finishes, you know, because you'd have the first round, the second round, and you'd have three different. So I can imagine, you know, it was just more sporty. The interviews and stuff like that, they didn't do those, and the soap opera kind of storylines, they didn't have. It was just like a sport, just not actually like in the US. But I really enjoyed it in the US too, so. But there were the differences, yeah, more sporty in the UK.
When you first got introduced to wrestling, did you have any favorites at that time? Any of the wrestlers or any favorites that stood out?
Yeah, I mean, I had a bit of a crush on Mark Rocco. So he was my favorite at the time. But I actually just appreciated, you know, how well these guys wrestled. And when I came over to the US, I was like, the first wrestler I actually met was Hulk Hogan. And the reason I met him was because Chris and I had just got to Los Angeles, and he worked for the LaBelles, and they were filming the Rocky movie at the time we first got to the States. And we got to be a guest of Terry. So, you know, you're seeing a lot of differences in the size of the guys as well. And, you know, when I was there, it's like at 19, 20 years old and got to be on the set of the Rocky movie when Hulk was on there. Mm-hmm. You can imagine I was just ecstatic. It was amazing.
Sure.
Experience. A kid my age just came from England, and it's like, wow, that's the first experience I get. So I was just like in awe of it all. Yeah.
Well, we know that you've gotten to work with a lot of, some people consider the greatest professional wrestlers of all time. What can you tell us about your time with Gentleman Chris Adams?
You moved from the UK to the United States around 1990. You came to Dallas, Texas, which at that time was a hotbed for professional wrestling. What were some of maybe your most memorable moments at the Sportatorium down there?
The fans would be a huge one, because they were like diehard fans, and they were so cool. They gave that building so much electricity. You know, that Sportatorium building was like none other. it had a smell to it, it had a an atmosphere, and I think the fans there were just so awesome. And I watched this documentary where Kevin Von Erich went back and they were pulling the building down, and I was like, oh my God, that should be a, I don't know what you call it, but kept forever as some place that people could go, because it just seems like that place should never have been pulled down. It was a historical kind of building, you know. I mean, if I ever went back to Dallas, that would be somewhere I have to go and see the sportatorium. But it was amazing, that place. It really was. It was electric in that building. It just had a special atmosphere.
Well, it goes without saying that you've spent a lot of time with some of the amazing talents in professional wrestling. Arguably, you spent your time with the greatest professional wrestler of all time, Steve Austin. When you first saw Steve, you guys were kind of doing an angle together, but what were your initial thoughts on Steve Austin?
I remember Tony Adams was the one who first introduced me to him, and that wasn't the best introduction, but I think, you know, we just said, hi, and he turned around and walked up the stairs, actually, and I thought, okay, he's not too happy about having a girl with him. You know, that's my immediate thought. I said to Tony, is he okay, you know, having a valet? And I first thought, you know, perhaps he's not wanting to do an angle. Perhaps he just wants to be on his own. But as we went into Jerry Jarrett's office and Chris was there, and over the course of a few weeks, we'd have some small talk, and we actually became really good friends. For a long time, we were just friends. And we would get along really good. He was really humble, really, you know, polite and humble guy, and really sweet. I mean, I don't know if, you know, he was first coming in. I don't know how the industry getting really famous changes a person, but the first time I met him, he was very, very sweet and humble. Very sweet, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're sure you get asked this all the time, but could you maybe tell us the story about how you helped create Stone Cold's name and helped with the Austin 316 phrase?
Obviously, Steve was not happy with the Ringmaster. And again, he wasn't happy that Ted DiBiase was with him, because Steve doesn't like people to talk for him. And he didn't get the mic as much. Obviously, he's brilliant on the mic, no taking away that. He wasn't keen on being with the Hollywood Blondes either. But he got to like it afterwards. But I think he preferred to be on his own. He didn't like the Ringmaster, and he didn't want that gimmick at all. And he came up with his own concept of a character that he would like, which is the plain black trunks, the plain black boots. He wanted to have a bald head now and all of that. And we happened to just see a show on the TV, and that inspired the concept for him from the Iceman, the documentary. And he wanted to be a character kind of like that. He didn't he wasn't able, to use the name, because Iceman King Parsons had used the name Iceman. So he called up Vince in the office, and he said he wanted a similar sort of character with a temperature kind of based name, similar to something like the Iceman. And the story is, you know, they faxed him all the hokey ones. I'm sure you heard the story, Fang McFast and Ice Dagger causing a lot of fun in the beginning with him and Brian Pillman, because I would laugh so much at these faxes of all these different names. And but at the same time, he was a bit frustrated because he hadn't found the name he wanted. And because I'm from England, I do drink hot tea, and a habit Steve picked up by hanging out with me. So I would make him tea all the time. And he was sitting on the end of the bed. He was really pensive. He was worrying about what name he could come up with. And I said, "Oh, stop worrying about it. Just drink your tea before it gets stone cold." And I went, "Oh, there it is, stone cold." And then he had a big smile on his face, and that's how it happened.
Did you ever think that he would end up getting as popular as he did?
Not as popular as he did, no. Obviously, he was extremely good at what he did. And he was doing well in WCW with his wrestling ability. But he had frustrations in WCW. I think the King of the Ring interview, you know, was not meant to be his match, actually. It was meant to be Hunter's match. But Hunter had some problems, and they put him in the match with Jake the Snake. And Austin 316, "I just whipped your ass," just, whoa, there it goes, you know, after that interview. And he was a heel, but kind of a babyface at the same time. So, and that was when Sean and Brett were having their issues as well, I think, with, you know, what was going on between Sean and Brett at the time. And nobody sort of noticed that this guy is, like, getting really popular. And then, you know, he became phenomenal.
What would you consider maybe some of the proudest moments of your career?
I was lucky enough to go to WCW. Obviously, I got pregnant and had to quit that. But, you know, they had this tournament at the Omni in Atlanta. And I always thought, you know, that was another sort of like the sportatorium. That was just a really cool building. And we won that championship with a match with Sting, and I actually got to get in the ring to distract Steve, and I came up behind Steve all the time, and then I had Sting got in the ring, and I had to get to run my fingers through his hair to win, and we won that match. That was a pretty good highlight there. Just being on the pay-per-views were a big highlight as well for me. So Sting was somebody who was, you know, at the top of the roster at that time. So to work a match with Steven Sting was awesome for me.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I enjoyed that.
Great.
On a more serious note, for anyone who's listening to this today, who may be suffering or going through any of the same things that you were doing, what would you say to somebody that may be going through a hard place right now?
Well, I know as an addict that you're very secretive. Addicts are. They don't really want people to know that they're taking too much. You know, whether it's like if you're meant to take two pills, you're doubling it up, and then you're adding this. And most addicts will hide the amount they're taking and become deeper and deeper, and then they get on that wheel like a hamster of a cycle of you can't do anything because you need your pills or you're going to get ill. I think there's a lot of shame and guilt that you feel, like you're ashamed of yourself. And I think, therefore, you don't want to let people know because you think that they're judge you. But I think it's important to talk to somebody, and like I did, just come out, and there is support out there, and it's important to get the support, whether you go to rehab or to your GP, or tell somebody you can confide in, but not to suffer in silence and think that you'll get better, because it just gets worse and worse, and it does end up either drugs will kill you, or you'll go to jail, and they will win. You won't win. They will win. And sort of before, if you feel like you're sinking and sinking and sinking, is just tell somebody you need help, and, you know, just come out and be honest about it, and don't worry. Just get better that way. Just get some support.
Well, Jeannie, we really appreciate your time today. Where can the fans keep up with you on social media? And do you have anything coming up in the near future where fans may get the chance to see you?
Social media, you can find me on Facebook. I'm under Jeannie Clark or Jeannie Williams. I'm going to be coming back to some conventions. I'm negotiating now, and when I find out where they're at, I'll definitely be posting it on Facebook.
All right, great. Well, we thank you so much for your time, and we wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day, and I'm honored to have been on your show.
Today's show is brought to you by... Have you ever dreamed of being a professional wrestler? Then the Platinum Fitness Professional Wrestling School is the school you want. Located in Danbury, Connecticut, and led by Randy Sean Lockwood, a pro wrestler with over 15 years' experience, Randy brings his passion for wrestling, as well as his vast knowledge to the school, with many guest trainers to enhance your knowledge, skill, and performance. If you're looking to make your dreams a reality inside the squared circle, then the Platinum Fitness Professional Wrestling School is your best choice. Call 203-628-7757 or visit PlatinumFitnessCT.com. For more information.
This is your Olympic hero, Kurt Angle, and you're listening to another wrestling podcast in association with CelebVM. Order a personal video message from me and many other wrestlers and celebrities now. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
Get a personal video message for yourself or as a gift for someone else. For personal connections, shout-outs, birthdays, proposals, weddings, and much more. Enter your details about yourself so the celebrity can record a personal video message especially for you, including details such as your name, age, birthday, hobbies, or whatever else you include. As soon as the video has been recorded, you'll get an email with your link so you can share it on social media or download and keep it. Celebrities record videos as and when they can, usually within 2 weeks. But if you want a video for a specific date and it does not look like it will arrive in time, you can cancel it and get an instant refund at the click of a button. There are hundreds of celebrities to choose from and many more joining every day. Search by category or genre, buy a gift voucher, get updates and offers, and encourage your favorite celebrities to join so they can connect with fans in a fun and unique way, raise money for their charities, and much more. So order your video now for yourself or for someone else.
See Kurt Angle, Cody Rhodes, and the Hardy Boys live as Northeast Wrestling and the Hudson Valley Renegades present Wrestling Under the Stars at Dutchess Stadium in Wapichers Falls, New York, Saturday, August 27th. See Kurt Angle battle Cody Rhodes. Jeff Hardy takes on Japanese legend Jushin Liger, plus Matt Hardy, Jerry Lawler, Hornswoggle, The Now, and much more. Autograph session with all the stars before the matches. Tickets start at only $20, available now at NortheastWrestling.com and the Dutchess Stadium box office. See the Hardy Boys, Kurt Angle, Cody Rhodes, and more live at Dutchess Stadium on August 27th. Visit NortheastWrestling.com for more info.
Once again, we want to thank Jeannie Clark for coming on and talking about her new book, Through the Shattered Glass. You can pick it up on Amazon right now. It's an amazing book and really brave to be able to put yourself out there like that. She's had some personal demons and some personal struggles, but she's turning them into personal triumphs. And we look forward to having her back on the show at some point. Just a class act. And thank you so much for coming on today.
Now, a few years ago, WWE.com put out a little poll on the Mount Rushmore of WWE. They basically gave out 12 superstars and legends for people to choose from who would be the top choices to be on the Mount Rushmore. These choices at the time were Bruno Sammartino, Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, The Macho Man Randy Savage, The Undertaker, Bret the Hitman Hart, Shawn Michaels, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, Triple H, John Cena, and believe it or not, CM Punk. Now, Jonathan, they conducted a poll on their website, and do you know the four who were picked the most?
Oh, wow. I'm going to say that Stone Cold was on there.
Stone Cold is one of the ones on the Mount Rushmore.
I'm going to say Undertaker.
The Undertaker is also on the Mount Rushmore.
I'm going to say The Rock.
The Rock was not on Mount Rushmore.
Wow.
But the following two is John Cena and Hulk Hogan. So they're Mount Rushmore. From the polling that they did with the WWE Universe, The Undertaker, Stone Cold Steve Austin, John Cena, and Hulk Hogan is their Mount Rushmore of WWE. Now, when you think of the Mount Rushmore, Jonathan, the four biggest names in the company, who would your Mount Rushmore be? Who is there any, you know, from what they have, is there anybody else you'd want to see on there? Would you take somebody off, put somebody on? What would your mount look like?
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot, and it's probably ever-changing, but to be completely honest right now, gun to my head, the Mount Rushmore, the four people that I think have done more for professional wrestling really than anybody, I would say...
Bret Hart?
No. I would say Hulk Hogan. I feel that that's accurate. He took it to the next level. I would also include Ric Flair because of just like the actual wrestling ability. He made it legitimate. He made it look real, whereas Hulk Hogan made it more entertainment. I would say Stone Cold Steve Austin, who ushered in the Attitude Era and really, once again, took wrestling to another platform. And in the same token, for the Hulk Hogan to the Flair, I would say the Stone Cold, it wouldn't be the Stone Cold without a Shawn Michaels. So Shawn, Stone Cold, Hulk, and Flair are my Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling. I think you just hit your own little nail on the head, but here's the kicker. I apologize. You can't have all four Bret Harts for your Mount Rushmore. So what are you thinking? I mean, obviously that's a given. Let's but talk to us about this. Like, what's your criteria going into this?
Sure. So going into this, I would have to pick at least the four biggest names throughout, not each decade, but each, some of all the different eras. You know, first off, I'm going to put Andre the Giant on there. Larger than life, you know, a guy who put pro wrestling on the map as much as Hulk Hogan did. So Andre the Giant's going to be on there for sure. We're putting Andre up on there. Hulk Hogan's definitely going to stay there because he definitely was that big name in the 80s, man. There was no other name you were talking about in the 80s that got you interested in wrestling besides Hulk Hogan. I know there's other little ones people are going to say, but it was Hulk Hogan that pretty much started the craze of what's happening now with pro wrestling. So Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart is going to be up there next, Jonathan. Bret Hart. Now, Bret Hart, he basically picked up that ball that Hogan dropped when he left, and I feel that Bret Hart was the first, you know, wrestler to, you know, to be taking over the WWE as a champion, because they were stuck in that hokey stage, and you had Hogan wrestling, basically doing leg drops and nothing else, really. But Bret Hart came in there, started doing, you know, submission moves. He's the excellent of execution, you know, need I say more, but Bret Hart, I can talk all day about that. Bret Hart, number three on the Mount Rushmore. Now, the tough one after this, because you have names like Cena, Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels. I honestly would have to say John Cena. I think John Cena has been that big name for the past 10 years, keeping the WWE afloat. And, you know, without John Cena for the past, you know, decade, you don't really have a WWE, you know, going. I'm just thinking in my head who else I would pick, but yeah, man, I would pick those. Andre, Hogan, Bret Hart, and John Cena. That would be my Mount Rushmore.
Well, I think that one of the things to really do here is, if you are listening right now and you do not agree with us, that's fine. Everybody's got their own Mount Rushmore. I would suggest that you all call in to our very own hotline. You talk to us about what you think, who we left out, who you would put on. That number is 802-297-7672. Once again, that is 802-AWP-7672. Well, that's the show. We want to thank you all for listening today.
Every week we do this show free of charge for you, the fans.
And if you're wondering how to repay us, we have just the thing.
Subscribe to us on iTunes.
Hey, and while you're there, be sure to rate us and give us a good review.
If you're looking for more information about AWP, then head on over to anotherwrestlingpodcast.com.
We are all over social media, and you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and more.
If you are an AWP superfan, you can also show your support by going over to prowrestlingtees.com/anotherwrestlingpodcast and buying one of our official AWP shirts.
We couldn't do this show without you, so tune in next week for
Another Wrestling Podcast.